Welcome to Local Matters, Mountain Express's news podcast that we try to do every week. This is Margaret Williams, news editor, joined by senior news reporter David Forbes, who attended city council this week, and they had more to do about Kenilworth zoning.
Yes, this is actually, the zoning itself seemed not a huge deal if one just looked at the agenda and knew the context behind it. It was proposing rezoning the site of the Kenilworth Inn and some surrounding territory from institutional, which is a holdover from its days as a luxury hotel and mental institution, to
not necessarily at the same time.
Well, it depends on one's view of the rich, but no, not at the same time, ostensibly. So, and now it's upscale housing there, and it was going to shift the site of the inn and them surrounding land to various types of residential zoning. However, there was a whole context to the fight over this area. Specifically, last year, the developer of the Kenilworth Inn, Frank Allington, brought forward a proposal for the Caledonia Apartments, which council resoundingly rejected. They said it was a proposal for 100 apartments. They said the roads were too narrow, the slopes were too steep for the development to be in any sort of keeping with the area.
And it failed, and council sent Allington back to the drawing board, so
back,
to speak?
Back to the drawing board. That was whatever everyone thought. Then Allington, however, splits the project into two 50-unit developments, very similar, though, and goes just in a bunch, but with this to be two separate 50-unit developments, does not have to go back before city council. Council, or at least a majority of it, was pretty angered by this, and so they passed a change to the UDO, the city's development rules, specifying that that a project couldn't be slightly modified into two separate projects, and then to escape kind of council's ruling that if they it got to them and for whatever reason and they rejected it, that's it for a while. So that it also angered the residents of the area. It resulted in a series of dueling legal maneuvers. The Kenilworth residents appealed Allington coming back with the two separate, technically two separate developments. Allington appealed the city's decision. There's a lawsuit involved now over it should be noted the changes the UDO passed with some council members objecting. Saying they thought it was too targeted towards one specific project. On top of all that, you have the council was down a member for this because the developer had retained Esther Mannheimer, who's a council member, her law firm, which means that she couldn't vote, and she was originally against the development and for the UDO changes. So with all that, staff had proposed rezoning the area. They said the institutional was a holdover, and that the residential was more appropriate and would limit development in the area to basically kind of what it is in the similar to what it is in the surrounding area.
And that's what was before council for their May 10th meeting.
Yes, with all that iceberg of context behind it, which explains kind of why emotions ran high at the meeting to some degree. You had all that background. You had the developer, attorney for the developer, saying that this was this council was being and staff were being capricious. That they were seeking to arbitrarily impose limits upon this developer. There's a business owner who came up and said that he was, even though it wasn't did anything to do with the project, that he was. This is the reason why developers don't like to come to the city of Asheville. The perception that the rules change in the middle of the game. As a matter of fact, that was what Jan Davis, who was one of the council members who opposed the changes, said. Essentially. At the same time, you got a lot of residents from Kenilworth show up, and you had members of the Coalition of Asheville Neighborhoods, Chris Pelley, who's running for city council and is also the head of the Hall Creek Neighborhood Association, all showed up and said, this is an obvious common sense thing to do. It's not an institution anymore. It's clearly residential now, and this is, and dense development, large development is, they said, not appropriate on the level of slope and with the narrow roads some of the areas have. They said that some of the denser development in the area was all along major roads, near major outlets, which this would not be. And so even though ostensibly the rezoning was at issue, really the history of this whole site and the proposed project, which is currently on hold while the legal fighting's being done, was really kind of behind a lot of it. In the end, the votes just weren't there for the rezoning due to a protest petition by the developer. If there's a valid purchase for petition for council, the amount of votes required to rezone something goes up fairly considerably. It would have required 5 out of 6 votes, and neither of the rezoning changes for either Kenilworth and itself.
One vote was 3-3.
3-3 and 4-2 were the votes. And the first one was to rezone the sloping area that's been the subject of the Caledonia Apartments and a lot of the controversy. The second vote was to rezone the inn itself. They both failed. They both just couldn't meet that threshold. They would have needed 5 votes.
So now what happens?
Well, the area remains zoned the way it was unless, you know, council can come to an agreement of how to rezone it. And the project remains in limbo while the legal battle continues. However, interestingly, the Barbara Melton of the Coalition of Asheville Neighborhoods and some of the other people there were saying they encouraged residents of neighborhoods to check out zoning in their area because they said you have, in their minds, lingering zoning in a lot of areas that is left over from uses. You know, some of them use residential space now, but it has this institutional zoning or, you know, commercial zoning left over from some previous use from the neighborhood, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So, mm-hmm. Encourage people to look at that and ask city staff or council for changes if they feel they're appropriate.
Hmm. Okay, so there's still more to happen with that issue. What else, what other kind of things happened at city council that evening?
Well, council approved an increase in the recycling fee, and this has been the subject of some deliberation and debate for a while. And what this increase would do is pay for larger recycling bins. Asheville has an amazing rate of compliance with recycling. It's 80% or above. And these larger bins, the city people recycle in the city know, there's these small blue plastic bins. These larger bins, they found, increase the ease of recycling. So people just put a lot of the items in there at once. The city sorts it. It increases people's willingness to comply with it and ability to store a lot of recyclable materials if they generate a lot.
So they're switching, there are two bins now, green bins and blue ones. Mm-hmm. Are they switching to one larger
switching
bin?
To one large bin.
Just one larger
one
bin.
One large bin, one single large
and
bin.
And increasing the fee to?
That actually, the exact terms of that remain to be negotiated out. It's going to increase probably about 60 cents a month. But the results of that are also, they're negotiating possibly with a company called Recycle Bank, but it could end up with another company as well, a rewards program for people who recycle. And this is in other cities, this has taken the form of rewards, of, you know, coupons, of significant discounts. The Recycle Bank claims it can save a significant amount of money for the people who recycle frequently and recycle a lot of material. That passed with 6-1, with only Mayor Terry Bellamy objecting to it. Living wage rules also for contracts between $30,000 and $90,000. That passed 5-2 with Jan Davis and Bill Russell objected to that. They had concerns about the amount of cost and it being a subsidy and that sort of thing. So, yeah, you can find all the details in the next issue of the Mountain Express.
David, you also had a chance to speak to the new Democratic Party chair, Emmett Carney.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Carney is a longtime local attorney, party activist. It was after a fairly contentious season for the Democratic Party chair race. You had a lot of people from Asheville City Councilmember Cecil Bothwell, former chair Kathy Sinclair, Lindsay Simmerly, who's a director for Heath Shuler's part of Heath Shuler's campaign, all kind of throw their hats into the ring and then kind of take them back out for various reasons. And Carney did emerge by acclamation unanimously at the convention as the choice for chair. He's one of the younger chairs they have. He's 35, so it's kind of an interesting shift in that sense. But at the same time, he spoke to us about, you know, his perception. He thinks the reputation for infighting in the Democratic Party between the old and new guard and in Buncombe County, that sort of thing is overrated. He says the Democrats are actually very unified, and he says he points to actions by by Representative Tim Moffitt as being an example of what he calls a heavy-handed approach from Raleigh that is unifying Democrats further. And he discusses some of his, you know, his thoughts on the Journal Party, why he's a Democrat, and what they're seeing, kind of looking forward to, you know, the campaigns in 2012 and their anticipation of him kind of roll with the punches when it comes to redistricting.
I was going to mention redistricting.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see how that plays out.
It will indeed.
So GOP is in power for the first time in 100 years, and they get a chance to draw our districts, our voting districts, for
yes.
Congress. And there's a rumor that the pending bill for making the county commissioners elected by district will go to a vote next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it's already
indeed.
Passed the
That's
House.
It's been hugely controversial as it has no local referendum required, which is nearly unheard of when it comes to this sort of change.
On the other hand, this is something that some folks in Buncombe County have been trying to get accomplished for many years.
True, yes.
Well, thank you for joining us, David. Till
next pleasure.
Time. Okay, joining me now is reporter Jake Frankel, who's been all over the place this week, from things to do with Disney to Strive Not to Drive. So tell us a little bit about what you're looking into.
That's right. Well, Strive Not to Drive kicked off this week on Wednesday with a presentation on some of the upcoming changes on tap for the Asheville transit system. Starting later in June, they are going to be changing all the schedules and all the routing, hopefully to make riding the bus easier and more convenient. Some of the changes are still being worked out, but they're looking at, along all the main corridors, increasing service to be in half-hour increments rather than the current 60-minute increments.
Mm, that's a big change.
That's a huge mm-hmm. change. They're also closing the gap between daytime and evening service. Right now, there's kind of a dead area there in between the daytime, which usually ends, depending on the route, around 5 or 6, and then the evening routes, which usually kick in around 7. So right now, they're looking at changing that to just be one consistent routing schedule where there's no break. They're also changing the name of the system from the Asheville Transit System to Asheville Redefined Transit. Acronym ART. That is part of an overall marketing overhaul of the system designed to increase ridership and try to get more people to use the system.
And there's some ART on some buses, actually, so that's an interesting acronym they would choose.
There is, and I heard that they are going to be changing the look of the buses as well as part of all this. But I couldn't get anyone over there to tell me what kind of look they're going to have just yet. There's a lot of other things going on with Strive Not to Drive coming up. This is kind of an annual campaign put on by a lot of different partner organizations in the area to try to encourage people to use forms of transportation other than the single-occupant car. They're trying to get people out on bikes, buses, and walking, commuting to work and kind of looking at other ways of getting around. And they're hoping that with the high gas prices now, that might find a little more traction than normal.
True. I've started carpooling.
Yeah.
To save a little gas.
Yep. One of the things going on next week is that that bus fare is going to be free all week for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to be providing commuter stations next week on Friday throughout town for folks who are riding the bus, walking, or biking to work. They're going to give out free breakfast and free coffee and things like that. And if anyone wants to find out the details on where those commuter stations are going to be, they can check out mountainx.com.
And look in our beat column, there'll be a few details there. What day of the week is the commuter station?
That is next Friday.
Next Friday. The 22nd? Oh, April. The 20th. Friday the 20th.
Yes.
We'll get it right. We have to check the
May 20th, yep.
Good. And some other big news about the transit system. The city there's a management company that manages the bus service, and the city oversees that, supposedly because the city cannot deal directly with unions, which bus drivers and some other members of the transit system are. But the city is changing. They're looking for a change.
That's right. We broke that story this week, and we're going to continue looking into how that plays out. But yes, we found out this week that the city is putting out an RFP, which is a request for proposal for new management companies to possibly take over management of the system from First Transit, the current management company. They took over about 3 years ago, and they were up for a 2-year extension option this summer, and it seems like now the city has decided not to take them up on that option and is looking for new proposals from new companies to take it over. Like you mentioned, state law prohibits cities in North Carolina for negotiating directly with unions, and a significant portion of the bus drivers in Asheville are members of a union. First Transit has had a mixed safety record in their time managing the system.
Some very public accidents in the past year.
There's been some very public incidents. Right now, the city is finishing up a safety audit of the management system. They have not released those results yet, but I think quite tellingly, the city manager, Gary Jackson, told me that they're going to use a lot of their findings in that safety audit and put them into any new contract, put safety requirements into any new contract with any new management system.
And do they have a timeline on when how they're going to go through the process of picking a new company?
Well, they're hoping to finalize the specifics of the RFP in June, and then it'll be a several-month process, taking inquiries from interested companies and then feeling them out and coming up with the right one.
Hopefully, too, in the next few weeks or so, we'll have the results of that safety audit. That should be very, very telling.
Very much. Yeah, we're looking forward to getting that as soon as they'll give it to us.
And anything else on your radar? The Franco radar.
Well, I went to an interesting event, a couple interesting events yesterday evening. I went to the Joshua P. Warren has a new museum downtown, right next to Pax Tavern, in a building that was used to be part of the old county jail. For those who don't know, Joshua P. Warren is a self-declared paranormal investigator. He has a radio show on WWNC News Radio on Saturday evenings, which is very popular. And yesterday, he unveiled a new exhibit which examines the urban legend of whether Walt Disney ever lived in Asheville or not. I always took this, growing up in Asheville, I always took this as a matter of fact, that a young, unknown Walt Disney lived for a time in Asheville as a draftsman. And I know a lot of other people have thought that. It's funny, you know, like most urban legends, I don't even remember where I heard that, but I accepted it as the truth. And as a lot of people have, yesterday evening, Joshua Warren and his team of researchers declared that after months and months of exhaustive research, they have conclusively found that Walt Disney did not ever live in Asheville. They went to the Register of Deeds office and tracked down some old plats that were rumored to have been drawn by Walt Disney with some doodles on them that people had claimed that he had got fired for, but because he was doodling on these plats.
Like a little Mickey Mouse here and there.
There were no Mickey Mouses, just some kind of funny hand drawings and stuff. He had an independent art expert look at these, and that expert said that there's no way that he could conclude anything about him, that Walt Disney drew him or not. He also looked into local tax records and other records at the library and could find no record of any Disney in the 1920s ever being in Asheville.
Ah, well, another myth debunked.
We shall see, though. We'll see if this really debunks it, or if people continue to say it. I mean, this is something that's been written about in all kinds of publications. In the 60s, when Disney, after he passed, the local papers all had articles about how we used to live here. It's been written in books on North Carolina curiosities, and a lot of people still say he was here. So I don't know. We'll have to see. Warren hopes that this will be the conclusive end to the debate, but we'll have to see if it continues anyway.
I see about that. In other news, you know, Asheville, downtown Asheville in particular, is the scene of many a protest and a rally and a gathering and sign holding, and there was one just recently.
Yep. Another thing I went and checked out yesterday evening was the We're Not Bashville Equality Rally. This started last May after there were a series of alleged hate crimes in Montford on LGBTQ individuals. Like last year, this year marchers met at Todd Tasty's and marched throughout Montford and then gathered downtown at the Vance Monument. The goal, organizers said, was to make a strong statement that people of various sexual orientations are in Asheville and they're not afraid and they're just as much part of the community as anyone else, and they hope that getting together like this will help increase their rights and help promote policies along the lines of the ones that the Asheville City Council just passed recently, a few months ago.
Domestic partnership registration.
Creating domestic partnership registration. Gordon Smith, city councilman, was at the rally, and he encouraged those there to take advantage of that registry and other opportunities the city council is working on.
And of course, on the state scene, there are some pending bills that would not recognize, that aim to discredit or not recognize such city-run registries.
Sure, and even more than that, there's a lot of leaders in the General Assembly now are trying to put a state constitutional amendment on the ballot.
To expand the Defense of Marriage Act kind of things.
Yeah.
Well, we'll certainly stay tuned to those, and we'll see you next time what's on the Franco radar.
All right, thanks.
Well, that wraps it up for Local Matters. Till next time.